This podcast is brought to you by BrunnerAcademy.com, your online resource for the best public speaking, presentation, storytelling skills courses. Become a rockstar communicator in any setting. Visit BrunnerAcademy.com.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to Live Your Best Life with Liz Brunner. I'm Liz, and my goal with each episode is to share stories of people who are recreating their lives or rising above challenges to write their next chapters with authenticity. These stories give me the courage to go after living my best life, and I think they will do that for you too. If you like this episode, please leave us a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to the show, so this podcast can continue to inspire next chapters all over the world. In the age of machines, technology, and AI, jobs are changing faster than people, and the stakes have never been higher to get it right. For more than 2 decades, my guest has had his finger on the pulse of today's changing workforce, and he believes that putting love to work stands as our indomitable, unique edge. He's an entrepreneur, keynote speaker, and a future of work strategist. Seth Matheson, welcome to my podcast.
Liz, thanks so much for the warm introduction and for the opportunity to sit down and have this conversation. I'm looking forward to it.
As am I. You are a thought leader, and your insights around change and innovation are sought after by worldwide organizations, from startups to established giants, with a major push to bring soul back to strategy, to put love to work. What does let's put love to work mean?
We're just going to go right there, right out of the gate, huh?
We are. It's a big question.
It is a big question. It's a question that I've been grappling with for the last 18 months, pretty intensely. Mm-hmm. And it's an idea that's been percolating for a total of 5 years. I've spent the majority of my career talking about the future of work and leadership. And obviously that's a broad bucket. There's a lot of themes that fall underneath that. And in 2019, there was a leader who went up to introduce me and was sort of giving some opening remarks to his internal leadership team. And he sort of made this just joking, offhanded comment about the fact that he didn't really like people. I just couldn't get over it. I got up on stage like, of course, you don't want to like call your client out. But I found sort of an appropriate window to address it of like, you know, when Greg came up here and mentioned not liking people, and I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but in order to be a leader today in this environment that we're operating in, it's not about liking people. You have to love people. And I didn't plan on saying it. It just came from a place of, I really believed that and felt called to say it in the moment. The second it came out of my mouth, there were a couple of things that happened. One was just the way it landed in the room. The first time I ever brought, you know, a word like love into a, you know, a hardcore business setting. I liked the fact that there was a portion of the room that leaned in and sort of had that body language of like, yes, that's what I believe. Like they've been waiting for someone to say it, to give them permission. And at the same time, there were a few people who were like, you know, a little closed off and a little uncomfortable by it. And I liked that too. It was like, good. Because if everything we're saying, every single one of our audiences is agreeing with, it's very likely that you're not pushing the bounds and bringing new ideas and shifting the zeitgeist and bringing new paradigms into the world. If your clients agree with everything, you're not going far enough. Instantaneously, there was a little message of like, there's something here. And so for years, I was wrestling with and giving myself varying degrees of permission to sort of bring a love message in. But I felt like the idea of needing to love your people was not big enough, and that there was a larger story and concept to be had. It wasn't just about loving your people. It was about understanding this idea of love as an energetic force of creation, and that it can drive purpose and passion and creativity and can fuel all sorts of incredible things inside the business. It is a force to be harnessed. And it's so much more complex than just creating a culture where people feel valued and seen, et cetera. And so when we say, let's put love to work, that is a phrase that is the manifestation of years of thinking about the idea of love in a work setting and trying to find a way to articulate it of how do we interject it in absolutely every single thing that we do. Every conversation, every interaction, every product, every service, every process is brought through a lens of your love being put to work, which means what? To put your love to work means to make it with love, which means what? It means to do the best you can do, to make the best you can make to the best of your ability out of love and devotion. And I think if we do that, it's our great advantage, it's our X factor, and it's our greatest gift to one another.
Well, navigating certainly this new world can be so confusing and frustrating. And as you say, technology is eating away at how we differentiate ourselves. Yeah. So besides putting love to work and coming from that place of love, how do we find our advantage in this new work world today?
We're moving into this moment in time where technology is able to do more and more aspects of our work. ChatGPT's current version is already pretty good, can write better than most
scary
people.
Scary good.
It's scary good. And it's a fraction of what it's going to be. If it can do all of those things, what's the part of it that it can't do that I get to have a unique advantage with and that I can maintain relevance? Because I think a big question that certainly is on my mind, and I think a lot of folks' mind right now, is how do I stay relevant in a world that's changing this fast? How do I maintain or keep adapting to develop new skills that bring value to the marketplace? Can I change fast enough to stay relevant? What would that need to look like? You know, you start to play it out of like 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, however long each of us has to do this work. When we say putting your love to work in this AI age, where you find that, you want to look for clues of where your love lives. And I think there's a couple of things that you can do, just at a high level, a few things for folks. One is just notice and pay attention to what gives you energy. What is life affirming and life giving versus life draining and depleting? Like what just naturally energizes you? That's a good place. Two, notice what you notice that other people don't. Like what are the things you see and pick up on in the room that nobody else seems to notice? Whether it's something around imagination or creativity, or it's empathy and understanding, and you can facilitate conversations. Like, what do you notice others don't notice? Love is often in between those cracks. And my hope with yours and my conversation today is that people, at a minimum, it just starts to open their aperture a bit to tune into this of like, where are my loves? How might I feed them? How might I nurture them? And then how am I putting them to work?
Well, you believe, as I do, that we all have the power to create a different story for ourselves. And you have done just that. Growing up on a fourth generation farm in Minnesota, you described that time in your life as, quote, living on knife's edge of losing the farm and all that that entailed.
Yeah.
What was life like for you as a child? Where did you come from?
The time frame we're in right now is during March Madness. And I'm smiling because I went to a game this weekend, the second round here in Charlotte. It's the first time I've ever gone. It has such deep roots and connections to my childhood. What did that feel like living on the knife's edge? I'm watching North Carolina play, and I can remember being in fifth or sixth grade because we couldn't afford to buy like the actual jerseys. I took my gray sweatpants and cut them off, and I drew the North Carolina symbols and signs of what the shorts actually looked like, made the jersey with a marker because I drew the Nike sign on it because we couldn't afford Nikes. Sitting there at that game on Saturday night with great seats, more money than I would have ever imagined spending on tickets, and just having the deep visceral feeling of being 12, 13 years old, desperately wanting Nikes that year, not being able to afford it, making do, and knowing what it was like to not have enough. And yet at the same time, to give color and context to that, to be in a family where we always acknowledged and pointed out that there were people who were way worse off than us. And that while maybe we didn't have a lot, we had so much to be grateful for, love and family and connection. There was always enough food on the plate. We never went hungry, like all of the things. And so I am very, very grateful to my mom and dad as an entrepreneur, knowing what it's like to go through challenging times and to create an environment to just get us through. It makes me more than anything today grateful And I try really hard not to take things for granted, like being able to go to the games on Saturday night.
I love the fact that you shared that story about the Nike swoosh, because I believe you also did that to a pair of Air Jordan sneakers because you couldn't afford to buy them.
I was doing it on everything, right? Clothes, shoes.
I love that. Well, people certainly are living longer, which I think in most respects is a really good thing. And you talk about that so many studies suggest that we're going to have this 50-year career journey in maybe 5 or 6 different chapters. I mean, I even say I'm in my 4th chapter. Who knows what the next one's going to be? What have been your most pivotal career chapters?
It's interesting. The thought of us all now needing to prepare for 40, 50 plus year careers. On one hand, I fully believe that's true. And then on another hand, I'm like, we don't even fully understand like what jobs are going to be left in 5 to 10 years.
Right.
We all see this mixed bag of information that's getting published. Most of us are dramatically safe. The thought of where Gen AI is going is mostly overblown. And then you read others and you're like, within 5 years, the robotics that are in place mixed with the AI, these machines are going to be able to do things we couldn't have imagined. And so is it 50 years? Is it 5 years? I don't know. But in either situation, I think we do have to be prepared to embody and develop certain skills and mindsets that make you what we call future ready to meet that moment. I came out of university and went into management consulting. I was very serendipitous and fortunate that I sort of came into an environment that was studying essentially high performance, you know, looking at the primary research and then in the trenches with our clients doing executive alignment, culture change work, transformation efforts. In this early season, I was getting a firsthand view as to the primary pain points our executive clients were confronting and facing. And one of the pain points that was coming up was the shift around generations. Millennials were just starting to enter the workplace, 2005 and 6. It was the first time as an entrepreneur, I'd sort of been taught, you look for pain in the marketplace, you can bring a unique solution to that pain. There is a business opportunity there. Mm-hmm. Here's pain. I have perspective as a member of this generation. And then, you know, listen, I went out and I read 2 books and I figured that was 2 books more than most people. And so that was enough to consider myself an expert on the subject. I don't recommend that for everyone, but you know, as an entrepreneur, sometimes you got to just bet on yourself and be a little audacious. One of the books I picked up was by an Australian kid named Peter Sheehan, and that's 2006. Peter was the first real author to write about Gen Y millennials. It became a world bestseller. He traveled all over the world. And what it did is it opened my eyes to this possibility of being able to be a speaker, a thought leader, to bring concepts to the world and share them in writing and through voice in the real world. And it's pretty incredible to think almost 20 years later, Peter and I are business partners and dear, dear friends today. And when I read that book, he literally lived in Australia. So the universe conspiring on your behalf. I do believe when you have a clear vision of where you're trying to go, trust and faith, things show up and come into alignment to help you get there, especially if you're acting in of service. I started to develop my voice. In 2013, there wasn't a lot of people talking about the idea of the future of work. And now I think we're coming into a new season and a new chapter of research and work and the messages I feel called to bring to the world.
You have many more chapters of that, I am sure. A book that you co-authored with Joshua Medcalf called The Future of Leadership, Elevate Your Influence, Navigate Disruption, Bring Out Their Best. Such a great read and so full of powerful insights. And one of them that really struck me is a comment that's made between two of the main characters, which goes something like this. You're not a bad leader at heart. You just have some bad habits. Mm-hmm. I imagine that's true for a lot of leaders today.
My hope is that more people read this book. It's been a few years now since we wrote it, and I keep evolving the content. But I have to tell you, the model and the framework, this idea of moving from a top-down, hierarchical, centralized world into a decentralized network world where power is distributed, that framework has been transformative for so many of my clients. And it's a part of the reason why we were able to have, I think, a lot of the success we've experienced over the years of, in my opinion, it is a unique view. It is a unique story. And it deeply resonated with audiences because, as many people who are watching this can probably relate to, the longer you've been in the world of work, we all sort of learn how to play by these kind of quote unquote unwritten rules, the unwritten rules of hierarchy. Respecting the chain of command, paying attention to the hierarchy. We all know which direction information flows, how to make your boss look good, like all the things of succeeding in that world. It's sort of like we're fish in water and we don't even know we're in the water. But all of a sudden now, because of new digital technologies, mobile and social and AI, there's a new level of empowerment that's essentially flattening that hierarchy. And so the opportunity for leaders today who maybe, again, they're not a bad leader at heart, but they developed some bad habits and practices from watching hierarchical, top-down, command and control type leadership. It's all they knew. It's what we experienced. And then inevitably, you ascend into that role and we start to adopt those same behaviors versus now it's an entirely new, a new type of leadership. And the simple framing that I give it is to think about the leader of the future no longer leads from the top of the hierarchy. She leads from the center of the network. She pushes empowerment out to the people closest to the problems, closest to our clients, so that they can serve, solve, and support people at their highest level. You're a coach, you're a facilitator, you are an empowerer, but it does require that servant leader mindset of my job is to make other people look great. The more people I can help evolve into their next highest iteration, that's the definition of a great leader. Not how many followers do I have, not how much adoration do I have, my title, my tenure, my salary, et cetera. And the world just has less and less tolerance for those kind of leaders today.
I highly recommend this book, and it reads almost like a novel, but there's so much wonderful content in it.
I appreciate you saying that, Liz, because my co-author and I, we went back and forth a lot on like, how do we take this? You know, this could be a really heady sort of scientific-based book. No one reads those. And so it was like, could we bring it to life through a beautiful story, through a real parable?
And you did.
And we did. And here's something that I don't hardly ever talk about or get an opportunity to talk about. And that is, you know, that book came out, what, 2017, 2018, something like that. This is all of the big awakening that the world has had.
Right.
We made the hero, the heroine of this story, an African-American woman. Mm-hmm. She was at the heart of it. And the way we even reveal that is to sort of catch people off guard a little bit of what is the vision of the person you're imagining. I'm really proud of that. You know, I don't know that that gets enough attention.
Well, I don't want to spoil it for listeners because I highly recommend reading the book. I didn't want to put it down. And when you do reveal some of the things in the book, that's all I'll say. I just kind of went, oh, wow. So I'm really glad you guys wrote that. It's wonderful. One of your LinkedIn posts talked about the power of journaling, and that's something that you and I have in common. And you wrote that you write for reflection and you write for creation. How has journaling helped you create your future?
Today's entry was a combination of both. It was some reflection on the past weekend, and then I'm continuing to grapple and wrestle with this concept of putting love to work and how that manifests and where it shows up. How has it created my reality, essentially wrote my experience into the real world, is that as I go back and I look at my previous journals over the past couple of years, I could see number one, it's beautiful because you can see where you're at in that season of what you were grappling with, what you were thinking about, what you were in pursuit of trying to create. And then you fast forward a little bit and, you know, press fast forward on the movie. And then you start to see yourself coming into those seasons. You're like, you were writing about and thinking about those things 12 months, 18 months, 24 months, years prior. Number one, it's powerful for reflection and lessons learned. But I think it's also incredibly empowering moving forward to say, what do I want to create moving forward? Like it's great. I'm so happy and excited and proud of what's in front of me right here and now. And what do I want to create next? And being clear and intentional about it. And if I don't know, that's okay. I don't have to beat myself up about it, but give myself permission and the space to think about it and explore it. Because what we write, what we see manifests in our reality.
But as you're writing that future, as you're trying to manifest that next reality, what have been some of those own limiting beliefs that you have had that you have had to overcome to say, wait a minute, I'm going to continue to give myself permission here?
I definitely battled a number of limiting beliefs. Mm. For all of the things I'm incredibly grateful for and was blessed with in my upbringing, the flip side of coming from a lower economic environment is it can create limiting beliefs around money, around what's possible, where you can go in your career, you know, because what you see reflected back to you, it helps expand your belief. You know, no one in my family had gone to college, and there was no doctors in the family. There's no lawyers. You know, my family were the groundskeepers, the housekeepers, the maintenance people, and then running the farm. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's amazing. And they're beautiful people and you can have great careers. But the thought never even occurred to me that I could be a doctor. So I didn't even think about it being possible, let alone think about it and then pursue it. It was just like, it wasn't even a part of my reality. And so I have feel like I have had to continually push against a whole limiting view of what's possible in my life, period, and expand into that. And yeah, each time you reach a new level, then you hit the next ceiling of like, okay, now you're here, but like, I could never build that size company. Okay, I wrote a book, but I can never write in a New York Times bestseller. Like, get real. Like, you don't have the chops for you're not that good of a writer. You reach the next ceiling. And I think we all experience this. And so this is where the power of journaling and reflection comes back and becoming aware of when those limiting beliefs crop up. Like, oh, there it was right there. Okay. I've been working on that, but it's still there. It's still showing up. Showing yourself grace in that moment. No, I don't have to beat myself up, but I recognize it, which is a huge aspect of being a great leader today is like self-awareness. Mm-hmm. To know yourself, where those shortcomings are, where those limiting beliefs are, as I'm working on this new body of work and thinking about what could be possible for it. Like, get real, dude. Calm down. Write the book. It's not going to be start with why. Like, that's an example of like, well, why couldn't it? Maybe it could be. Feeling it come up and recognizing it as a part of our opportunity. And I'd be willing to bet for those of you who are tuned in right now, you have those experiences too.
We all have limiting beliefs. As you think back to your childhood and where you came from, and even to the days when you were donating blood platelets to make ends meet, What does success mean to you today versus what it did back then?
Freedom. But it's more complex than just freedom. It's the freedom to fully express. It's the freedom to create experiences for myself and my family. It's the freedom to take a shot at making an impact on the world. It sort of all circulates around that idea to experience, to express, to elevate, to expand yourself. Comes back to freedom.
Folks, if you want to learn more about Seth and the transformational work that he is doing as a keynote speaker, a consultant, an author, I invite you to go to his website, sethmadison.com. We'll have that in our show notes for you as well. Seth, thank you for inviting us to not only lead with love, but to put love to work. Because while machines may replicate some of the work that they do, they'll never reflect our souls. And you really have brought that to light today. Thank you for sharing that.
Thanks, Liz.
And thanks to all of you for tuning in today. May Seth's story offer you the power to create more meaning in your life, to create your own unique and possibly even different story by putting love to work to live your best life. Until next time, be well.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Fast Twitch Media, helping people tell their stories and giving them worldwide reach. The future is in the cloud, and Fast Twitch Media can take you there. Be your best digital self. Check out fasttwitchmedia.space.